David Reneke, time to catch up with a man who knows the heavens, and that's why we love talking to the man. Hello, David. It's been a while, but we've reconnected.
Good to be back with you, Bilko. Have you got your I Don't Believe It meter there?
Tell me what's going on.
Well, we've got a few stories this week that are really, really out of this world.
Tell us about Uranus, and I mean that in the
book. Well, Uranus is something we've got to be careful of because you never know what might happen if it's pointing in the wrong direction.
Exactly.
And it certainly is. I do mean that in the best way. I know that you've got a morning show, but I'm sorry to do that to you. But listen, this, we call it Uranus. How about we try that?
Uranus
is on its side. It's spinning around the solar system on its back, and we don't know why. Now, astronomers came out with a theory some many, many decades ago that maybe something whacked it. Maybe when the solar system was being put together by the grand designer or whoever or whatever.
Could be Thor's hammer if you believe in the, the MCU universe in the movies. You familiar with Thor?
Where you come from. Yep. It could have been whacked by an object, maybe a protoplanet that spun it over on its edge. I kind of like that. Because it answers a few other questions. Why has Mars got a big gash in it?
Yes.
And why does Venus spin backwards? But anyway, they computer plotted this planet, and the only thing that doesn't gel is that the two planets, Uranus and Neptune, were born at the same time. They're basically twins of each other, yet one is, diametrically opposed in its axis to the other. One's on its side and the other one's upright. So the new theory is that maybe there was a giant moon that formed near Uranus as well, and it caused it to topple over a period of time. Its gravitational force tugged it over. But Uranus is one of the enigmas of the solar system. It does spin around its north and south pole, not pointing up and down, points left and right.
I didn't realise that scientists would have realised that, or, known that a planet could be literally on its side. I mean, how do you determine if a body that's supposedly spherical could lean on its side? Are you saying it's more elongated than what even this planet is?
Its axis, yeah. It's rotation. When you if you run a line through the middle of an object like the Earth here, you'll find that we're tilted at 23.5 degrees to one side. That gives you a nice season. Now, if you tilted that on its side, you'd see the surface features would be spinning around top to bottom instead of left to right.
Okay, right.
And also the magnetic field, your north and south magnetic poles. Would be the giveaway as well.
Well, that's a big thing I've learned. Uranus rather than Uranus. That's something we always had fun with when I was at school. But you've got to be a bit more mature when you look at the heavens. I've got to ask you about this too, mate. They've found the brightest flash in the sky, these astronomers, and people would think, it's something to do with the sun, but it's not.
Well, hang on to your gasp meter.
Yeah.
Get your gasp meter ready.
Yep.
This is one story that I didn't ever think we'd ever have. This is a story that I still have a lot of trouble with. It's an object that shouldn't exist, but it does, and we don't understand why. But there's a star we've seen explode, and they watched it on October 9. Now, this is one of the biggest stars we've seen blow up. It's called a supernova. Nothing unusual about that, but this one was more intense than anything we've ever seen before. It was the brightest flash of light ever seen, and it occurred 2.5 billion years ago. That light's still coming here, 2.4 billion light years from Earth.
Mm.
All of a sudden, a star decided to give up the ghost. And what they do, they implode and then they explode, forming a black hole. And that's what this star did, 30 times bigger than our sun.
And doesn't that seem a bit weird? We're talking a bright flash, but it relates to a black hole that doesn't really let any light escape.
Well, this is the event before a black hole.
Oh.
A massive star will implode.
Right,
because it's running out of hydrogen fuel, and then the pressure will build up so much that it will overcome that compression and blow itself apart.
Right.
So most of the outer shell gets blasted into space. And when that does, we see this flash of light called a gamma ray burst. Now, the afterglow is still there, even a couple of weeks later. Get this. This is this black hole, when it created that flash of light, in that 1 or 2 second interval, it released about the same energy as our sun will produce in its entire lifetime.
Yeah, we got no idea the amount of energy that's being put out by these things. I mean, they could power our planet, or we would never need fossil fuels for the rest of time if we could harness it.
Look, you can't grasp this.
Yeah,
it's too big to even say. Oh, well, okay, you understand. You don't. I don't understand. This is power from the sun. That's literally pouring out trillions and trillions of gosh knows whatever we want to use. Watts, is it, or whatever? It's pumping it out every second, and our sun is over a million kilometres across. Yet this thing is putting out in 2 seconds that it explodes as much energy as our sun will in its entire 5 billion-year history. I have trouble with that, and I have a trouble with a lot of things, but that, to me, is beyond our comprehension.
Yeah. All we need to know is we'll solve our energy needs for the entire civilization, for our entire, species, for the rest of time, David.
We've got to accept it, because it's happening. We see it. Anyway, that was the largest explosion ever seen, and the largest amount of energy released in one fell swoop.
That is incredible. Have a look at it at daveranicki.com. There's more on that one. I find this story fascinating, because I suppose a lot of people love delving into this, especially around Mullumbimby and places like that. Crystals, space crystals, and they want to get crystals with human DNA on the moon. Is this a way to preserve us as a species or something?
Yeah, it's a vault. It's a vault to preserve humankind. And it's not a new idea, but this is a company called West Point Space. Space crystals. These are crystallized human DNA. Put them in crystals on the surface of the moon, where they can remain intact forever. Now, on the moon, nothing ever happens there. It's a continual vacuum, and it's been that way for billions of years, and it'll stay that way. So it's a perfect place to have a safe deposit box. But what are we putting in there? We're putting in our human DNA. So what it means is that if you've got $150,000, this can happen to you. You can live forever. Your DNA can be on there.
Or if a species comes by in a billion years to look at the remnants of what is left of the moon, they would actually be able to recreate you in some way if they wanted to.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're talking about, recreating the Tasmanian tiger. If we can get the DNA, the right sort of material, you could do it. You could reproduce it. But this is a vault. This is a vault where if anything ever wiped us out, if we wiped ourselves out, or if something clobbered us, we didn't realize it was too late to do anything, the human race could live on. If there are a few stragglers left over and they could make it to the moon, you've at least got the basis of the human race.
A bit like that seed vault in Antarctica or whatever, or the Arctic.
Sorry?
Like that seed vault in the Arctic where they've got all our species of plants? Yeah.
Yeah, yep. So this is an idea whose time has come. We've got the wherewithal to do it. It's a time capsule containing a gigabyte, too, of your personal data. So you can have on there, look, not only with your DNA, but your favourite songs, photographs of your family, your whole life history. Isn't it weird when you think about this? It's science fiction that we've seen in various shapes and forms and ways and manners in different movies over the years. Most of this stuff is coming true now.
I would hope they'd keep a DNA copy of your space book. You know, you've delved into the space race, David.
Why not? You know. He lives again. Why not?
That's
Astro
right.
Dave is back.
Astro Dave is in it. One final thing, David, if people want to have a look at these stories, daveranicki.com. Look, we always get fascinated with what wiped out the dinosaurs. We talk about this mega asteroid. There's more There's more studies on what happened.
Yeah, they have. I mean, this is interesting. We know that the dinosaurs wiped out by some sort of a body that hit the Earth some years ago, 60 million years ago. But with new technology now, new computer programming, they're looking at this and try to unravel the whole thing, see how it all played out. And I think it's interesting when you can do that, and they have. It's the mega tsunami that we're talking about. Not an ordinary tsunami, but a mile-high wave. Can you imagine a wave a mile high?
That would be as big as, I think, one of our local mountains here where people go for a bit of a bushwalk of a weekend.
Well, we've got to come up with an answer. Three-quarters of the planet was wiped out in one fell swoop. Now, this study is being done. It's a global tsunami we're talking about. To simulate that, they used a thing called HydroCode, a three-dimensional computer program that models how fluids behave in dynamic situations. Now, the entire asteroid itself, to do what it did, it's got to come up with a figure of about, this is in the old scale, two quadrillion pounds it weighed. And that's about two followed by, 15 zeros.
Golly.
So it's a lot. Now, what happened was this created a tsunami wave that went around the world, a mega tsunami wave that would have been a minimum of 1 mile high.
So hang on, you're saying the entire coastline that existed back then got this tsunami, not just one little pocket?
Well, you can understand that the majority of life was wiped out. The little animals that lived in the trees, but also underground.
Yeah, yeah.
They were the better ones. The dinosaurs weren't. And the other animals, not all the Earth was covered, but it did certainly do a lot of damage. But can you imagine a tsunami? We can't imagine what that would do today. It would wipe civilization out. And this is one rock. This is only one asteroid that came in and hit near the ocean shore there off the coast of Mexico, the Yucatan Peninsula.
Well, look what's happening with climate change. I mean, they talk about us getting a couple of more degrees warmer, raises sea levels by another 2 or 3 centimetres. I mean, coastal cities all the way from Queensland to Sydney, we're inundated, we're gone.
Yeah, it would change the face of the Earth forever if something like this came in here. And that's why, you know, we've been pretty vigilant in looking for these large rocks and why there's so much movement with the DART mission to try and redirect one. Because we've got to be prepared for the inevitable. It's not a case of if we get hit by an earth-shattering asteroid. It's not a case of if we get hit. It's a case of when. Because the history of the Earth shows we've been clobbered 5 times, or there's been around 5 major extinctions, probably most of the mass extinctions in our history. And astronomers and geologists agree that at least 2, maybe 3 of those you know, can be put down to the intervention of an asteroid or a comet.
And that's why NASA's doing what it's doing with its crashes into asteroids. And, you know, they're just trying to work out a way of trying to save our planet. And so they should.
Well, we can move them now. We can move them. We're the first generation in history to be able to save ourselves. We're the first generation in history to be able to change the course of history. If anything came by like this 100 years ago, there's nothing you could do. It's good night, Alice.
Exactly. And that's why we need to give NASA all the funding it needs, or even other space bodies, to add to the planetary defence. I mean, it makes sense.
Well, it's all to do with looking after us, yeah. I mean, this is what a lot of people don't realise. And NASA and other space agencies and things like that come in for criticism all the time of wasting money. It's not. When you look at the number of spin-offs you're getting from it, you're using over 1,000 things every week.
Yeah.
That are a direct spin-off from the space program directly or indirectly. And don't forget that every $1 spent on the program returns, in general, around $14 back to the economy.
So that makes sense to me. Anyway, more of that at davidwarenicki.com. Till next week, my friend.
Talk to you then, Bilko.